Welcome aboard to 3 hours of live and local radio on WNTK 99.7 FM in Newport, New Hampshire, and WUVR 1490 AM and 98.9 FM in Lebanon, New Hampshire. This is Saturday Sports Talk. Your catch up with what's happening in high school and college sports around the Upper Valley. I'm Greg Fennell. We are starting to speed things up a little bit as far as spring high school sports are concerned. Lebanon baseball off to a nice beginning to the season. Lebanon softball with a win yesterday. We'll talk details on that as well. Busy weekend for Dartmouth sports. Softball back in action, trying to stay competitive in the Ivy League tournament chase with a roster that's almost down to the bare minimum. So details on that as we continue. And golf courses popping up all over the place. Talk a little bit about the start of the recreational golf season in the Upper Valley as we chat sports here at WNTK, WUVR, right up until about 10 o'clock today. Of course, it is 3 hours of live and local. We do this from the Hilton Garden Inn in Lebanon, Route 120, Le Lombard Road, right by the Dartmouth Coach Depot. Every Saturday morning for 3 hours, I'm here for one, and then usually Rich Parker, Rob Woodard after that for Valley Buzz from roughly 10 till 12, but Rich continues his sojourn with his Dartmouth men's golf team this weekend. They're down in New Jersey at the Ivy League Championship, so I suspect we're going to have Bob Hingston again with Woody for the program at 10:06, and that'll take you up till 12 to wrap up the 3 hours at live and local here on WNTK WUVR. And a little bit later on, after 12 o'clock is all done, got a couple of hours to kind of chill out and then get back to live radio on NTK at 3:05. Red Sox in Pittsburgh taking on the Pirates this weekend, and former Red Sox general manager, Meriden native Ben Cherington in charge of the Buccos. He won't be happy with the way things ended last night. Maybe the Bucs can do something a little bit more impressive on the Red Sox today. But they'll play again, second game of the series. 3:05 is the broadcast time on WNTK. 603-843-8623, the phone number for the studio in Newport. I still have to fight not say New London. It's been months, and I still want to say New London. Newport, that's where Tobin is right now, and he'll do all the hard work, picks the tunes, gets the microphones going, and all that other good stuff, makes it sound like a production. I just sit here and talk, which I will do even more right now, because not everything that happened in the sports world on Friday night made it to Saturday's newspaper. Time to read about it. My lovely wife asked an earnest question to me yesterday about the NBA playoffs. She said, what is this terminology? They're calling it play-ins and play-downs and playoffs, and what does it all mean? Well, for all intents and purposes, the NBA playoffs will begin now, because the play-in rounds involving seeds 7 through 10 are all done, which also means that the Boston Celtics know who they're going to be playing next. They'll be playing the bunch whose crowd was shouting, "We want Boston," in the fourth quarter last night. That's the crowd down in Miami, where the Heat rolled over the Chicago Bulls 112-91 in a play-in tournament elimination game. What's impressive is that Miami did it without Jimmy Butler. He's sidelined for several weeks with a sprained knee. Don't think he's going to be available for this best of seven with the Celtics, which is that much better for Boston. But on the other hand, they still have guys like Kevin Love and Bam Adebayo and Tyler Herro who can play basketball. And these guys know each other really well. They've played four times in the last 5 years, including a couple of conference finals. But by and large, the Celtics are the prohibitive favorite in this one. They'll open up the series tomorrow, 1 o'clock down at TD Garden. They go into that game as a 13.5-point favorite. They swept Miami in the regular season, 3 games to nil, most recently back on February 11th when Jason Tatum had 26 points in a 110-106 win. Herro with 24 for the Heat. Celtics 41-11 in Eastern Conference games. They lead the East in rebounds per game at 46.5, 8 of them coming from Tatum. So many things working in the Celtics' favor. In fact, they were as good as anybody in playing not just the teams that didn't make the playoffs, but the ones that did. The Celtics were 35-4 against the 14 teams that did not make it to the playoffs, but they were fairly solid 29-14 against those who did. That's why a lot of people are favoring the Celtics to win an NBA title. First of all, though, they have to get through the Miami Heat. Best of seven Eastern Conference semifinal gets started again tomorrow at 1 o'clock at TD Garden. The other team to get into the playoffs officially last night, the New Orleans Pelicans. Like Miami doing it without Jimmy Butler, the Pels did it without Zion Williamson. He was out with an injury, but New Orleans still got a 105-98 win over Sacramento to go into the postseason tournament. So everything is now official. The matchups are all good to go. Games starting today, Orlando at Cleveland and Philadelphia at New York in the East. Phoenix at Minnesota, and the Lakers visiting Denver in the West. And then Sunday's matchups, of course, you got the Celtics and the Heat playing at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, with the Pacers visiting Milwaukee in the other Eastern playoff series. The other Western Conference semifinals will pit Dallas at the L.A. Clippers and New Orleans at Oklahoma City coming up on Sunday. Coben Porter, younger brother of Denver star Michael Porter Jr., sentenced Friday 6 years in prison for a drunken driving crash that killed a woman in Colorado last year. It is not very easy being Michael Porter Jr. right now, because not only is he dealing with Coben's issue, but his other brother was banned from the NBA for his life, Jonte Porter, for, quote, league rules violated by disclosing confidential information to sports bettors, limiting his own participation in one or more games for betting purposes. In other words, he broke betting rules. But the Nuggets say they are supporting Michael Porter Jr. as best they can as they get ready for the playoffs. This surprised me when I saw this today. Not only are the Celtics getting started with the NBA playoffs, the Bruins are, of course, in the NHL playoffs tonight. They take on the Toronto Maple Leafs, and perhaps the best pure goal scorer in the game right now, in Auston Matthews, having swept the Maple Leafs in four games this season. Now, admittedly, the first two were close, 3-2 and 4-3 wins, but a couple of back-to-back 4-1 victories over the Leafs as well, beginning of March, makes you kind of think that the Bruins are a solid favorite in this one. But remember that they weren't the team that dominated the regular season last year, only to get knocked off by Florida in seven games in the first round of the playoffs. I think they've learned a lesson from that, but they're also playing a team that has a pretty darn good record as well that the Bruins can only hope to match. The games get started tonight down at TD Garden. 8 o'clock is the first contest in this NHL series. Only other series getting started today will be a 5 o'clock kickoff also in the East, with the New York Islanders visiting the Carolina Hurricanes. Then things get started in earnest tomorrow. Tampa Bay at Florida, Washington at the Rangers, Colorado at the Jets, and Nashville at Vancouver. And there are a couple of series that won't get started until Monday, and that'll be Vegas, Dallas, and Los Angeles at the Edmonton Oilers. Be as pessimistic as you want to be about the Boston Red Sox so far this year, and you've had good reason to do so. They didn't play very well when they are at home in the past week and a half after a really good Western road swing to open up the season. But one thing you can't deny about the Red Sox and that their starting pitching has been excellent for the most part so far. Continued last night in Pittsburgh, Brian Bello continuing to improve as the season warms up. He went six strong last night, seven strikeouts, shut out the Pittsburgh Pirates over the time that he was on the mound. Bottom line, Boston 8 and Pittsburgh 1 at PNC Park last night in a game you heard on WNTK. He had a bit of a hiccup, gave up four runs in five innings in his opener out in Oakland, but he has been solid and continues to get better as his starts continue. In fact, he got through the sixth frame in his fifth start of the year last night for the first time, just like he did at the exact same time last year. Change up a big deal for Bayo last night. Threw it 40 times, tied his career high whiff mark on that pitch with nine of them, and had called strikes plus whiffs of 14 last night. So all sorts of good stuff for Bayo. Now, of course, it didn't hurt that he had a lot of support from the Red Sox offense. Four home runs on the mound, just continuing to pound on Pittsburgh pitchers, scoring in five different runs last night. So everything working in the Red Sox favor. Starting crew right now, best ERA in Major League Baseball by a long shot. 110 innings, 1.72. You keep that up, it's going to win you a lot of ball games. Red Sox over Pittsburgh last night, 8-1. They'll do it again at PNC Park this afternoon, 4:05 first pitch and 3:05 broadcast time on WNTK 99.7 FM. To the scoreboard we go. The Cubs beat the Marlins. Count was 8-3. Reds over the Angels, 7-1. Phillies blanked the White Sox on a two-hitter, 7-0. The final there. Astros over Washington, 5-3. Yankees beat the Rays, 5-3. Guardians 10 and Oakland 2. Rangers lose in Atlanta to the Braves, 8-3. Kansas City beating up on Baltimore, 9-4. Kansas City off to a 13-7 start. They're looking pretty good so far. Tigers win in Minnesota, 5-4. Brewers in 10 beat St. Louis, 2-1. Padres were winners at San Diego, 5-1. Mets 9, Dodgers 4. Dodgers only 12-10 early on in the season, but it is early on. Beer League softball night in San Francisco for one team last night. Arizona 17, San Francisco nothing. Mariners in Colorado postponed by weather. They'll do a split doubleheader on Sunday. You may not be much of a college baseball fan, but you should be aware of one thing that's going on right now. Jack Caglione is knocking the cover off the baseball down at the University of Florida. Last night he hit a home run, a solo shot in the sixth inning against Vanderbilt, his ninth straight game with a home run. If he does it again against Vandy today, that'll break the NCAA record set by Nevada slugger Tyler Bossetti back in 2021 for consecutive games with a home run. Moving on over to the world of the NFL, longtime executive Bill Tobin has passed away at the age of 83. Cincinnati Bengals made the announcement. He spent 27 years with the Chicago Bears, Indianapolis Colts, and Detroit Lions, rounded out his career as an area scout for the Bengals, working alongside his son, Duke Tobin, who was the team's director of player personnel since 1999. Buffalo owners Kim and Terry Pegula are looking into possibly selling a non-controlling minority interest in the franchise. A person talking to the Associated Press said the stake would be somewhere around 25%. Bills announced that the Pegulas have hired a company to oversee the process of possibly selling that piece of the team. College football has decided to put the signs away, and they have agreed. The NCAA has approved a move to allow electronic communication from coach to player through a helmet for one player per team per side during the game for the 2024 season. This all comes out of the sign-stealing scandal that came out of the University of Michigan this past year. One player for each team will be permitted to be in communication with coaches while on the field. There will be a green dot on the back of the helmet to indicate who that person is, and the communication will be turned off with 15 seconds left on the play clock or when the ball is snapped, whichever happens to occur first. Should be interesting to see how many levels of the game actually manage to be able to afford that technology and be able to put it in practice for the coming season. Major League Soccer, New England Revolution, still trying to find their form, still sitting in the basement of the Eastern Conference, playing a team that's not exactly rocking the world either. They're at BMO Field in Toronto to take on Toronto FC tonight. The Revs have only won once with a draw in their last five. Toronto's even worse, one-win period against four losses in their last five. Toronto did get a 1-0 win over New England back in early March, a couple of weeks into the regular season. Some of the guys who were big factors in the Masters last weekend at Augusta National, very much in the field and near the top of the leaderboard at the RBC Heritage that's going on at Hilton Head down at Harbortown in South Carolina right now. One of them, Colin Morikawa, if the leaderboard would pop up here, and it does, shows he's in a tie for the lead at 11 under par through two rounds of play with Tom Hoge, Sepp Straka, and JT Poston. Remember that Morikawa was in the final pairing with Scottie Scheffler at the Masters final round on Sunday before fading at the end. Speaking of Scheffler, he had a bogey-free 65 yesterday, and he's very much in the hunt. He's just three shots off the pace. It's a non-cut tournament, limited field, about 70 golfers, Keegan Bradley in it, but at three over par near the bottom of the standings thus far down at Harbortown. LPGA Tour is in the midst of its first major of the season and possibly a history-making one. American Nelly Korda is one shot behind South Korea's Ji-Hyun Im and Thailand's Athaya Thitakul through two rounds at the Chevron Championship down at the Woodlands in Texas. Korda would set an LPGA record if she wins because she's already won her last four starts. Nobody has ever won five consecutive starts on the LPGA circuit. Finally, Talladega is the host of NASCAR's annual spring race down there. Of course, they go in, September or October for a second opportunity. But this one, first time on the Super Speedway since Daytona, the Geico 500 coming up at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon down in northern Alabama to see who pulls away with the victory in NASCAR Sprint Cup action or whatever cup action they call it nowadays at the top level of stock car racing in North America. And that is what you have for Read About It. We are coming up on 9:20 when we come back. High school action to review from yesterday, including a second straight victory for what looks to be possibly Chauncey Wood's best Lebanon High baseball team since he took over the job about 4 years ago. We'll talk about that next. I'm Greg Fennell, and you are listening to Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK and WUVR. For the time here on Saturday Sports Talk, dumbing down the music for you here on NTK and UVR. We'll tell you more about it as the program goes on here. So we pull our 80s punk and new wave out of the dusty library that we have. Tobin doing the work, 603-843-8623. I hope I'm teaching him something about how good music was back in the 80s, or late 70s, or early 90s, something like that. We'll have to find out sometime. High school stuff going on, busy, more or less. A lot of teams just getting started because, obviously, we've been dealing with a lot of things in this month of April. First of all, the weather was wackadoodle with two big snowstorms just about the time that it looked like everybody was going to get out and get early on the fields, and that got, you know, shot all the heck over a couple of weeks. Beyond that, you have spring vacation. Teams just getting back, or schools just getting back in session up here after a week away, and I think schools down south are going to be off the coming week, at least to what I understand from colleague Eric Rinston-Lobel down at the Concord Monitor. So it'll still be a little bit herky-jerky before we start getting some massive amounts of results, but we are starting to see some trickle in. And the early results, at least as far as Lebanon baseball is concerned, pretty looking good right now. Yesterday, Raiders improved to 2-0 on the season and the week, got a good 10-4 victory over Sauhegan, led by the pitching of Devin Brandis, who went 5 1/3 innings, gave up 3 earned runs out of 4 overall and 7 hits to kind of set the table for the Raiders. Offense, plenty of it. Bennett Hewitt went 2 for 3 with a triple and a couple of RBIs, stole a couple of bases. Ben Ockmoody had 2 hits, both of which were doubles, drove in a pair of runs and scored twice. And Ryan Lundgren went 1 for 3 with a 2-run base hit for Lebanon. So pretty much everything going well for Chauncey Wood, who I think is in his fourth season with Lebanon baseball. Raiders haven't been quite the team they've been in the past, but Chauncey's doing a good job of keeping them competitive, and I think we might have something worth talking about here as the season continues. Lebanon baseball, a 10-4 winner yesterday. On the other end of the spectrum, Hanover went into the season as one of the favorites in Division II, but has struggled out of the gate. They dropped to 1-2 yesterday with a 9-7 loss to Pelham. The Bears went up early, had a 2-0 lead in the second inning on Sean Nam's 2-run double with 2 outs, but it was pretty much all Pelham after that. Hanover did load the bases down by 2 in the bottom of the 7th, no outs, but couldn't put anybody across the plate, and that was kind of the punctuation on a disappointing day for the Bears. Coach John Granger admitting that the team had a lot of mistakes made, particularly at the plate, and certainly in that 7th inning when the game was right there for them to take it. Pelham 9, Hanover 7, Bears now 1-2 on the early season. Congratulations to new coach Matt Karcher and Lebanon softball. Got a win and a big one yesterday, improving to 1-1 on the year by routing Sauhegan 13-1, Katie Batchelder, Andy Lindquist, Avelina Pintella, and Raya Wykes all had 2 runs batted in for the Raiders in that one. Ava Karcher, who, of course, moved to the area with a family from Arizona with a good softball background, she'll be a key element to Lebanon having any success over this in the next couple of seasons. She pitched most of the game with Wykes coming in to close at the end of the contest as Lebanon softball picks up that good victory yesterday, 13-1 over Sauhegan. Hanover gave Pelham a little bit of a battle, but ultimately dropped an 6-2 decision to the Pythons yesterday. Pelham getting 2 runs in the first inning, 4 more in the second. Hanover got all of its offense in the 7th inning, hits from Abby Campfield, Jess Lobb, and Lily Smith, but not enough to make the rally complete as Hanover, I believe they have dropped to 0-3 on the season, or 0-2 in the early season in terms of softball action. Windsor also 0-2 early on. Dropped their second game of the week, this time to West Rutland, 16-3 yesterday. Cassie Clark had a hit and 2 trips to the plate for the Yellow Jackets, and Mackenzie Cleafish 2 for 4 at the plate for Windsor yesterday in the defeat. Not a whole lot of details from boys lacrosse, but got some scores for you. Lebanon dropping to 0-4 on the early season. They lost 11-1 to Co-Brown yesterday. Stevens 0-4 as they dropped a decision to Interlakes Moultonboro 14-4. I'm just going to throw this out, okay? Lebanon has had some issues with numbers in the past few years. Stevens has never been competitive because they don't have much, if any, of a youth lacrosse system, and from reading the preview for this year the other day from the local paper, hasn't won a game in 4 or 5 years, something like that. Has there been any discussion about doing a co-op team, kind of the way that Lebanon does with boys and girls hockey with Stevens? Just a thought. I think it would make for a better experience for the Stevens kids. It would give Lebanon the depth of humanity that they have been losing over the past few years. We know that school populations continue to decline a little bit in this area for the most part, and of course that is reflected sometimes in the depth of the athletic programs. Anyway, a thought that crossed my mind. Lebanon Stevens boys lacrosse is a co-op team. Not the worst idea in the world. Imagine somebody ought to talk about it. Boys lacrosse, Hartford, of course, defending state champions in Vermont Division II. They've had a good week so far. Two wins in two games as the Hurricanes were 16. Make that 17-4 winners, I think, was the final over Spalding yesterday. So a solid second game of the year for Grant Whiteway and his Hartford Hurricanes. On the girls' side, Lebanon lacrosse got its first victory of the season yesterday, 8-3 decision over Co-Brown. So the Raiders are now 1-2 on the season. Hartford, which was the top seed, I believe, in last year's Division II girls lacrosse tournament before getting upset by Woodstock in the semifinals, they're 2-0 to start the year with a couple of tight wins against decent teams. Last night it was a 7-4 a victory over Spalding. Maddie Barwood with two goals and one assist for Hartford in that one. Audrey Roop, the Windsor High kid who comes up and plays lacrosse for the Hurricanes, she had a three-goal hat trick. Nella Bowen, two goals and an assist. And Dakin Kovic in the goal had nine saves for Hartford. A nice solid win for Coach Heather Hartford and Hurricane girls lacrosse. Tennis yesterday, no great surprises. Hanover, 9-0 winner over Pinkerton. Lebanon, a 9-0 winner over Co-Brown. Both programs are 3-0 on the year. Lebanon, of course, the defending Division II state champions. Hanover made it to the finals in Division I before getting run over by Bedford in the final last year. But a lot of Kelly Finn's athletes are back this season. Hanover has a very high expectation to make a serious run at Division I honors that they had, I think, 2 years ago was the last time they won it. And both teams in very good shape in the first week of the season. It's all done for them. Girls tennis yesterday, Hanover continues to win, 4-0 on the year. They were 7-2 winners over Pinkerton. Lebanon girls, this is going to be an intriguing story. Rob Johnston, of course, the longtime boys soccer coach, a lot of success at Lebanon High, picked up the girls' tennis program a couple of years ago to try to rebuild it. And last year went 10-6 on the season, got to the quarterfinals, I believe, of the state tournament. First opportunity in a few years for a program that actually didn't even have enough girls to form a team a few years ago. They are 5-0 so far on the New Hampshire Division III season early on. They got a 9-0 win over Monadnock yesterday. So we'll see how the Raiders do. Rob has them playing some pretty good tennis so far. Hartford girls tennis was playing Harwood yesterday, down 3-1. I think they played the Maxfield Sports Complex courts, but that match had to be suspended when rain passed through the area. They will complete it on a trip up to Harwood in Waterbury a little bit later on this spring. Now, as for today's schedule, one team that I haven't seen anything on for good reason, they haven't played yet, Hartford softball. Last year, they earned the top seed in the Division II tournament for the first time in program history. Suffered, I think it was a quarterfinal upset, or maybe it was a semifinal upset to Middlebury, one way or the other. Hartford softball continues to improve with good numbers and good athletes, which is not an unusual thing for Hartford High School. They'll go to Bellows Falls today. First game of the season for the Hurricanes down in Westminster, Vermont. Same goes for Hartford boys baseball, except they're going to be at home at the Maxfield Sports Complex, 11 o'clock getting going against Bellows Falls today after winning, I think it was the first two games they've had so far this year. Also, on the baseball diamond, Newport cranking up with a Hinsdale doubleheader starting at 11 this morning. Oxbow baseball has Linden in town. That also starts at 11. Virgin's going to Thetford. Let's hope the field is dry enough to play. Thetford, one of those places that tends to be the last to dry out, and we've had a reasonably wet April so far. Green Mountain goes to White River Valley at 11 today. Woodstock baseball hosting Leland and Gray at 11 o'clock. Other 11 o'clock starts in softball mirror the baseball schedule. Newport playing a doubleheader down at Hinsdale. Oxbow softball, a rout of a win for their first game of the week earlier this season, hosting Linden at 11 o'clock. That is often a very good game. Oxbow, the three-time defending Division III state champions in Vermont. Linden, usually a very strong program in Division II. And it's a game that Oxbow really could stand to have because they have been so dominant in softball the past couple of years. It's been basically put a field on the team and the game's all over. Largely because they have a superb pitcher in Anastase Bourgeois who was a starter as an eighth grader for Oxbow. She was the winning pitcher when they won states 2 years ago, three years ago, because she's now in her fourth year as a starting pitcher for Oxbow coach Chuck Simmons. And they are, I wouldn't say prohibitive favorites, but they are strong favorites to grab D3. I mean, they routed Thetford in the state final last year, 9-0. Oxbow's got a lot of softball talent and should get a test today against Linden. Virgins goes to Thetford at 11, Woodstock hosting Leland Gray at 11. This is like the magic hour. 11 o'clock is everything today. Girls lacrosse has Hanover taking on Pinkerton and Woodstock going to Burr and Burton. Woodstock girls tennis in action at Stowe at, you got it, 11 o'clock. And a bunch of track getting started in the next half hour or so. Hanover at a meet down in Nashua North today. Lebanon heading off to Sanborn. Mascoma track, which has some really high hopes this year. Coach Rick Currier has deepened the roster for a school that doesn't have its own facility. Of course, who says you need to have a facility to be a state champion, seeing how well Hartford does without one. Mascoma, though, starting to get the numbers and getting the athletes. They got some big hopes for Division III. They've got a meet at Winnesquam High today, and Newport track goes off to Sanborn, and all those are 10 o'clock starts on the high school schedule. Let's take a timeout as we're getting a little bit closer to 9:35. We'll change our focus from high school to college and what's happening at Dartmouth this weekend. Women's golf is in good shape at the Ivy League Championships, and softball could stand to use some healthy bodies. We'll talk about that next here on Saturday Sports Talk. I'm Greg Fettle. Stick around. It's NDK and UVR. Coming up on 9:40 on Saturday Sports Talk. If it sounds a little noisy in the background today here at the Hilton Garden Inn, I think there's something going on outside the meeting room here that might be like a gigantic two-table Dungeons & Dragons game or some sort of role-playing game going on outside here. I walked into the lobby here this morning. It was presented by these two big empty tables. And the meeting room where I usually set up for this program and get things set up for the guys after me for Valley Buzz was wide open with the light open on, and I was thinking that maybe somebody had come in and taken over and was doing some side work or something like that. But the folks here at Hilton Garden Inn do great to keep our space ready to go. They said, I guess, everything that was going on out in the lobby out here knew not to interfere with the meeting room, so everything is kosher, maybe a little bit loud. But the nice thing about role-playing people, they don't curse. So I feel safe in here. I don't have to worry about naughty language, except which, might come out of my own mouth. Greg Fennell with you here on Saturday Sports Talk. Tobin in the studio in Newport, 603-843-8623, the phone number to join this conversation, or on Valley Buzz next up with Bob Kingston and Rob Woodard, I would suspect, because the Dartmouth men's golf team is in the midst of Ivy League championship action this weekend. 54-hole tournament going on down at the Watching Valley Golf Club in New Jersey, and Rich Parker's crew, is tied for the basement right now through one round of play. Princeton leading at 200 par, 282. Dartmouth tied with Cornell for the back spot at 15 over so far, 17 shots off the pace. Leading golfer so far for the big green, Tyler Brand, shot a 1 over 72 yesterday. He is 6 shots off the individual lead, and Alex Goo is at 73, 2 shots over par through the first round of play. Alex Kirk's Dartmouth women, though, having a little bit more success. 6 teams at the Sandwich Club in Greenwich, Connecticut for the Ivy League Women's Golf Championship, and the Big Green is in third place in a tightly packed group so far. Yale at 301, that's 13 over par. Penn is a shot back, Dartmouth 3 shots back, Columbia 6 back, and even the basement team, Harvard, 10 shots back through one round of play. Keep in mind, 6 schools, 5 golfers, so 30 golfers on the field or on the course as well. I believe top 4 scores factor into the team score, or top 3 scores. I'm not sure which, but I think it's top 4 Individually, Dartmouth doing pretty well as well. Sophie Tai and Catherine Sung are both at 1-over-73, two shots behind Pennsylvania's Julie Shin. Dartmouth's other golfers, Carolyn Chung and Penelope Tur, are at 79, 7-over-par. Kimberly Shen at 9-over-par, 81. So good luck to the Big Green men and women as they continue the Ivy League Championship tournaments this weekend. What's happening around the area today largely revolves around the softball diamond, where the Big Green will be taking on Cornell for an Ivy League doubleheader going on today. First game is at 12:30, second game sometime around 2:30, and a single game tomorrow at 12:30, all at the Dartmouth Softball Complex. It has been an interesting last couple of weeks for the Big Green, an interesting and not necessarily a welcome way. I think I've mentioned this before, that the roster is so small on this Dartmouth team that you've got to really be worried, and would have to be really worried, if injuries were to become a factor. And lo and behold, 2 weeks ago, they became a factor in a really big deal. I've talked a lot about Jensen Hall, the freshman pitcher from Texas, how she has kind of torn things up this year in Ivy League softball. She is the number one pitcher in the country in terms of strikeouts per game. But before the first game of a doubleheader with Brown 2 weeks ago, two Sundays ago tomorrow, she tweaked something in her arm, from what I understand, and has not pitched since. The number three pitcher on the roster, Stella Bale, has been out all year with an injury. They don't have a fourth. So all of the pitching load has fallen on the capable right arm of junior Rachel McCarroll. She's doing the best job she can, but so many players in this roster are injured. No Jenna Brown in the outfield. She did something, I think, to her Achilles in training in the offseason. Several freshmen on the roster are injured, can't play. I'm hearing that this is a team that may not have much more than 10 bodies for Cornell this weekend, which includes Rachel McCarroll possibly having to pitch all three games. She had to do that down in Princeton last weekend. Dartmouth got swept, not through any fault of Rachel's by any stretch of the imagination. They were supposed to play a non-league game with Merrimack on Tuesday. That game got canceled so Rachel could get some rest. Hoping to learn more when I get over to the softball park today to do PA duties. But, boy, I mean, it just this is a good enough team to make the Ivy League tournament. And, in fact, if the season were to end today, Dartmouth would still be competitive for a spot. As we look at the standings, nine games remaining in league play. Dartmouth is two games out of the last playoff spot. They're 5-7 in league play right now, playing a Cornell team that's 3-9 in league play. Yale is 12-3, but two of those losses came to Dartmouth in very good games up here at the Dartmouth Softball Park. Princeton 8-4, Harvard 9-6. They've taken two of three from Dartmouth. Columbia 7-5. Dartmouth and Columbia have yet to play, and I think they go up against each other to close out the regular season. That would be the case the weekend of May 4th and 5th. So the Big Green, if they continue in this direction, could very much be in a position of a win-and-in weekend when Columbia gets here. What they got to hope to do is that hope that Jensen Hall is good enough to come back to provide that second arm so Rachel doesn't have to do all the hard work and get victories where you can. And I think this weekend is one of those cases. Dartmouth is not a powerhouse hitting team, but they have hit the ball well in some instances. Catcher Mary Beth Cahalan, probably the other person on this roster who is indispensable, who would be a huge loss if she got hurt, has been hitting the ball really well for the Big Green lately. Out of the leadoff spot, here's a kid who was a cleanup hitter 2 years ago. I think it was a number three hitter last year. Coach Jen Williams, knowing her ability, put her at the top of the lineup this year to get that offense going because she knew it was going to be weaker at the back end of the lineup. And she's done a nice job this year, batting in the 300s again. Definitely all Ivy League first team candidate, I would think. Heck of a leader behind the plate, and she and Rachel McCarroll make a really good pitch-catch combination, as they do Jensen Hall and Mary Beth Cahalan. Other surprises so far this year, Quinn Wilson, first year, had a game-winning home run to beat Brown in second game of the series, I think it was, a couple of weeks ago. Or actually, no, I think it might have been to beat Boston University. But either way, had a real nice hit, nice surprise home run, starting to get used to the speed of the varsity game. Justice Malone, freshman first year at shortstop, very acrobatic, very athletic, had to miss a game earlier this season when she collided at second base, playing a tag on somebody trying to steal second base, came back with her right wrist wrapped. You don't want that necessarily out of anybody, but certainly not your shortstop. Just kind of goes to show you how a roster that I think is 14 to 16 when fully healthy has so many injuries that they may only have 10 or 11 players available. It's going to be tight for the Big Green as Cornell comes to town for softball action this weekend. Got a chance to see Bob Whalen's baseball team on Wednesday and on Sunday also. They got a league win over Brown on Sunday in which basically the Bears gave the game away. Brown had a 9-2 lead in the seventh inning. Gave up a 7-run frame to Dartmouth in which 5 of the runs were scored off of one pitcher on either a bases-loaded walk or hit by batter. I think it went walk, walk, HBP, walk, HBP. Everyone with the bases loaded, everyone forced to run in. A couple of more key hits, and then Dartmouth got a walk-off in the bottom of the ninth inning. Not so much against Siena the other day. The Bats only got, I think, 4 hits on the day, and Dartmouth looked to be a team that doesn't have any pitchers who can go very deep. Nobody threw more than 3 innings. That, again, could be a midweek thing. You know, Coach Whalen, like most every other baseball coach in the country, doesn't necessarily want to ride one arm in a non-league game. So dropped a non-league game to Siena. Baseball is down at Harvard this weekend. They got a doubleheader at noon today, and they will play a single game tomorrow to try to maintain some sort of position in the Ivy League baseball tournament picture. If we can head on over to the standings here real quick, I can tell you where they stand. I believe they're on the outside looking in, but after sweeping Brown last week, and that was a pretty good sweep, they are still in the picture. In fact, 7 of the 8 teams can claim themselves to be in the picture. Columbia leads at 9-3, Cornell at 8-4, Penn, Yale, Princeton all 6-6, Dartmouth and Harvard 5-7. If either Dartmouth or Harvard come up with a sweep this weekend, it could knock the other one completely out of the picture. So big weekend for Dartmouth baseball down in the Boston area to take on Harvard. Lacrosse, the women are at Princeton today, noon start. The Tigers, like they usually are, nationally ranked at number 17 in the country. The men are down at Brown. I would think that would be a winnable game because it's one of those teams that isn't ranked nationally. Saw Dartmouth last weekend. They came out gangbusters against number 9 Yale. Had a 7-1 lead after one quarter, but you knew that the Bulldogs were going to kind of wake up, and they eventually did. Reeled off 14 straight goals. I think it was 16 of 17. Eventually went away with a 20-13 win. But it was the first time I'd seen Dartmouth actually take advantage of the fast break this year. And not just attackmen, but long stick midfielders and defenders scored in that first period. And when that happens, that really is an emotional boost. It was there, but you knew that Yale was going to make its way back and eventually did by the early part of the third quarter, and by the time they did, Yale's excellence showed, and their experience off the ball as well showed. So Dartmouth lacrosse still near the bottom of the Ivy League, needing an Ivy League win because they haven't beaten anybody in the Ivy aside from Harvard in the last 10 years or so. It's been a long time since the Big Green has enjoyed success on the men's lacrosse field. Sean Kerwin, you know, is he the guy? He's an assistant formerly from Virginia, knows how to play offensive lacrosse. We'll see. You know, maybe not this year, but hopefully in the next couple. 9:50 is the time. We'll take one more timeout. Thinking of golf right now, probably because I watched so much of the Masters last weekend. Details next, coming up here on Saturday Sports Talk. Stick around. Coming up on 9:55. Yeah, we decided to get stupid today on Saturday Sports Talk. Morons and dopes and all sorts of stuff from what we could pull out of the dusty closet. Replacements, dope smoking moron. Dead Milkmen out of Philadelphia with a simple song called War on Garbage from the post-punk area with Stupid Girl. Your mandatory Ramones, Pinhead, which I think came off of either Leave Home or Rocket to Russia, one of their early ones. The Dickies out of Los Angeles, Just Say Yes, and you're listening to the infamous Fee Waybill and the Tubes from the late 70s with the tune called White Punks on Dope. we scraped the bottom of the barrel today. I was having some fun with this one. Tobin, thank you so much for pulling our 80s punk rock tunes for us here on Saturday Sports Talk. I'm Greg Fennell. We got Bob Kingston and Rob Woodard, I would expect, coming up next. Bob is usually good about updating his Facebook page Thursday or Friday when he knows he's going to host. I haven't seen anything yet, so it leads me to wonder if maybe somebody else is coming in, which would mean there would be a substitute for the substitute. But whatever the case may be, I would expect Bob, I would expect Woody, I would expect somebody. They'll be here in about 10 minutes to start Valley Buzz, and that'll carry you up until 12 o'clock to wrap up the live and local here from the Hilton Garden in Lebanon. Greg Fennell with you for a couple of more minutes. I probably spent more time watching the Masters than I have spent watching collectively golf over the last 2-3 years last weekend. I was confident from the start that Scottie Scheffler would be the guy to beat. He's played so well this year on the PGA Tour. A couple of wins, really hasn't been challenged, and it kind of turned out that way. When things got tough right at the end, Scottie was the most solid and picked up his second green jacket, and congratulations to him. And it continues. He's very much in the picture down at Harbortown this weekend. But, of course, once the Masters rolls around here, two things come to mind for me. One, courses around here should be opening up soon, and two, our azaleas and rhododendrons are probably about 6 weeks away from blooming. Maybe it's different with warmer winters or whatever. I've noticed that the forsythias have opened up in most places around here. One of my neighbors in West Lebanon has a magnolia tree that is bright white now, looking absolutely beautiful. Cherry trees and apple trees are probably a ways away from blooming, but still, spring is finally springing. Even after the tease we got in March when we thought that maybe spring was going to arrive soon and Mother Nature dumped 2+ feet of snow on us on one occasion and nearly another foot right after that. And most of the courses around here are open. I did a quick survey on the internet during the break. Most of them opened up this past week. I know Lake Maury was supposed to open up on Wednesday. John Larkin, where Bob Hingston is the guy in charge, they opened up on Monday. Carter Golf Club in Lebanon is open. Newport Golf Club has opened up. Last check, I saw that they were walking only on the back nine, which, given the fact that there's water in every hole in the back nine, that's not a great surprise, but carts on the front nine. The nice thing about Newport, of course, though, the back nine is tabletop flat, so you don't have to worry about hikes up and down hills like going up 2, 3, and 4 on the other side. Claremont Golf Club is open. Bradford Golf Club up in Bradford, Vermont is open. I would keep my eyes open on Bradford. It can flood occasionally because it's right on the Connecticut River with some low-lying land, but according to their Facebook page, they have opened up. And I think it's probably the case with most of the low-lying courses in the valley. Once you start getting up into the mountains, it might be a little bit later. For instance, Montcalm in Enfield won't be opening up for another week. I would expect places like Green Mountain National, any of the courses associated with mountains or ski areas in that area, might be another week or so before they go. But I would imagine they're going to come back and look in really good shape because we had a fairly good winter, I think, in terms of snowfall. Not huge, but certainly not drought-inducing like we've had a couple of years ago. I'm hoping they'll be in good shape. We drove by Larkin yesterday, my wife and I did. Fairways looked nice and green. The couple of greens that we were looking at looked a little pale. That could be a factor of not having had a huge amount of sunshine over the past week. And the temperatures have still been a little cool in the 50s or so, but there were people out there, so the opportunities are there. This was a sport that was one of the first to come back from COVID for understandable reasons. It was outdoors, and you could stay separate. So the benefits of it are still there. The benefits of walking certainly there for golfers. So I hope you get a chance to get out there and support the public golf courses in the area as they start to make their way into the upcoming spring season. Spring is right around the corner, folks, if not already here. That's it for Saturday Sports Talk today. I'm Greg Fennell. Thanks again to you for tuning in, to Tobin for his hard work down in Newport. We'll do this again in 7 days. In the interim, we believe it will be Bob Hingston and Rob Woodard coming up next for Valley Buzz after the news and weather. They'll take you to 12 o'clock. Red Sox baseball against the Pittsburgh Pirates. It's out in Pittsburgh. It's a 3:05 broadcast time on NTK today, so enjoy. Thanks again for tuning in. This has been Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK and WUVR. You all have a great weekend.